Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fortcast, the official podcast of Fort Healthcare. I am your host, Dr. Michael Anderson, serving as president and CEO of Fort Healthcare, and this is the official podcast of Fort Healthcare. I'm very excited today. With me is my guest, Dr. Jennifer Winter. Dr. Winter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Wonderful. And today we are going to talk about type 2 diabetes. And before we get started on that, I've been with the organization for roughly 20 years now. And Dr. Winter, how long have you been with Fort Healthcare?
I started with Fort Healthcare about 7 years ago in 2016.
Wow, time really flies. We are so thankful to have you. You do a wonderful job with our community. And this is just very exciting for us to have you on the Fortcast today. So thanks again for coming.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So type 2 diabetes, I know it is a very prevalent medical issue in our society today. Dr. Winter, could you please just educate us a little bit on what type 2 diabetes is?
Absolutely. So type 2 diabetes is a process in the body where your blood sugars are too high. And the reason for that tends to be insulin resistance. So it's not that your body initially isn't making insulin, it's that it's not responding the way it's supposed to insulin. We think it really starts in part from genetic predisposition and in part from kind of overnutrition or overabundance of calories. And when that happens, you set your body up to have more insulin than it needs. So basically you eat, your body has sugar, the insulin helps you store it and use it. And that process can ultimately lead to needing too much insulin, which then predisposes your body to carry extra weight. And extra weight tends to make your body less sensitive or more resistant to the insulin you have, and you develop this process where your system is not doing what it's supposed to do, and you end up with type 2 diabetes.
Gotcha. So the body becomes resistant to the insulin, and therefore you have more sugar in your bloodstream. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the insulin is trying to tell the body to either store or use the sugar, and the body is not responding the way it's supposed to those signals. So the sugar then circulates in the blood and it can cause damage. So sugar tends to be very sticky, and it sticks to your red cells and your white cells, and it sticks to your blood vessel walls and can cause inflammation there. And these things tend to cause long-term buildup of plaque in the arteries, which can lead to things like heart attack or stroke or kidney disease or blindness.
So that is an excellent point. So the long-term ill effects of type 2 diabetes can affect someone's vision, affect somebody's kidney function, increase your risk of heart attack and stroke. Would you agree with that, Dr. Winter?
Absolutely, yes.
So once somebody has type 2 diabetes, I don't want to assume anything, but I imagine they get monitored pretty closely long term for these potential ill effects.
Yes, we definitely do a lot of monitoring. So we check for average blood sugars, which we do through a blood test called your hemoglobin A1C, and that lets us know in general over the last 3 to 6 months how your blood sugars have been. And it gives us sort of an average estimate. And that can be very useful in helping us determine what your risk of long-term complications from diabetes are.
Gotcha. So once somebody has or has been recently diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, what type of treatments are there to treat people with that?
Well, we always start with lifestyle discussions. So, you know, the more you exercise and the more active you are, the less insulin resistance your body is going to have. There's something sort of physiologically that happens in the body that allows your body to be more sensitive to insulin. So using that insulin to help your muscles burn energy. So that's one thing. We like to say about 3 hours of exercise a week or more. So something that gets your heart rate up, gets you moving. That's kind of our first line sort of goal for people. And it doesn't have to be 0 to 100 in 1 week. We just want you to start the process of reestablishing new routines and getting back into regular activity. After that, we often talk about diet and the things that you eat. We know that the processed foods and sort of the general American diet is not healthy for the body, and it does tend to promote more insulin and more insulin resistance. And so trying to eat foods that are more natural, whole foods like fruits and vegetables, and avoiding sort of your more processed carbohydrates like pastas and breads and cookies and crackers and cake, those kind of things. If you can avoid that and stick to more your natural foods that look like they did when they came out of the ground, you'll do a lot better for your body.
I'm often told it's a lot like a caveman diet where you're eating stuff that comes out of the ground versus things that are processed. And anything caveman, I have a tendency to relate to. So that's good. So overall, diet and exercise are extremely important, not only, I'm assuming, again, once somebody has reached this diagnosis, but also for prevention. I imagine that plays a big role in prevention as well.
It does. It does. So the overall being more active and eating healthier foods tends to create a more lean body mass, and that definitely helps in the long-term prevention of complications such as heart disease and kidney disease and stroke risk. Blood pressure management tends to get easier if you're following that, and blood pressure is an independent risk factor for heart disease and stroke as well.
So now for those patients where diet and exercise may not be helping as much as we'd like it to, and they have to be placed on medications, I see it all the time. There seems to be a lot of different types of meds for type 2 diabetes. Can you educate our listeners a little bit on maybe the couple different types of medications for type 2 diabetes and how they work and also how effective they can be?
Yeah, absolutely. The first one that we always start with is metformin, which is a medication that has been around for a very long time. It has a good safety profile and is actually used for a lot of things, even outside of diabetes. But what it does for patients who have diabetes is it sensitizes the muscles in the body to the insulin that's there, making it easier for you to burn that glucose, that sugar, rather than storing it as fat. And so it's a very helpful medication in that it's kind of our first line because it really helps decrease that insulin resistance and therefore your overall insulin levels. And that does promote long-term good outcomes as far as helping prevent progression to heart disease or high blood pressure or stroke, kidney disease. So it's a very good medication that way. And it generally is pretty well tolerated. Sometimes people will get troubles with bowel changes, but for the most part, it's a very well tolerated med.
Outstanding. So metformin sounds like it's the first line treatment, as we like to say. So beyond metformin, what other options are there?
Well, and that is sort of an exciting new topic. We've for a long time didn't have a lot of new or better medications that have recently come out. So we have quite a few now that are much better from a physiologic standpoint. So medications like our GLP-1 medications such as Ozempic or Victoza or Trulicity, which a lot of people are aware of these days. And what these medications do is they work at the level of the gut and the pancreas and the liver to help sort of metabolize the sugars you have and to help reduce your hunger and help make you more sensitive to insulin. And it kind of reestablishes that normal rhythm of having sugar, higher levels of insulin, and then the insulin levels go back down once your sugars are better. So it really does help reverse some of those processes that happen when someone has diabetes. And they are generally well tolerated. They also have a lot of great benefits long term for heart disease, sort of independent of even having diabetes. So they're medications that will probably be used across the board for a lot of different reasons. But they're definitely our next line after that. Very, very effective medications.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. And I do agree, there's a lot of awareness on those meds because I see commercials for those medications all the time. They're everywhere.
One of the things to keep in mind is that they are injectable meds. So it is something that you would inject once a week. So people who aren't as comfortable with needles aren't as excited about them. But typically, people do well. Sometimes you'll get a little bit of nausea or heartburn the first week or so, but generally after that, people do really well with them. The next set of medications would be medications that work at the level of the kidney. So these would be your Jardiance or your Farxiga, and those meds help you get rid of sugar by actually peeing it out. And so that has proven to be beneficial to the kidney. So if you're somebody who has some kidney dysfunction and diabetes, that's a really good class of medications to use next. It's also independently used in people who have heart failure, even if they don't have diabetes. So again, has this sort of cross, you know, different medical conditions benefits. It is sometimes a little bit harder to use in women because it can cause yeast infections and bladder infections. And so sometimes we have to make sure we're counseling on that and watching for that. But generally, once people get on the medications and their sugars are more stable, that is less of a problem.
So beyond that, I want to touch base a little bit on when do you decide to put a patient on insulin? Because I do see type 2 diabetics on insulin.
Yeah, so some of these medications, some of our older medications, do require that the pancreas continue to have function in order to work. And so all of us, regardless of whether or not we have diabetes, need a certain level of insulin in our body. And the pancreas is the organ that gives us insulin. It helps create insulin. And at some point, because of needing to create more insulin and more insulin over the years as you have diabetes, the pancreas kind of wears out and it stops producing insulin. And often that's the point at which we need to start adding it back. And so we try really conscientiously to make sure we're giving enough insulin, but not too much, and trying to help people maintain what they need, because you have to have insulin to survive. And so generally, when I have somebody who either isn't responding to my usual medications, or if they're taking the meds that I prescribed and they still have too high of blood sugars, then I know that their pancreas is really struggling and we need to add that back for them.
I see. So what we're really trying to do in our treatment of type 2 diabetes is really prevent those major ill effects on our kidneys and our vision and our heart and our brain, to prevent strokes. It is really critical not only to be aware of type 2 diabetes, to screen for it, but then also to be treated for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, the screening process needs to happen when there's risk factors or at age 35 or higher. I think keeping in mind that some of the screenings we do once you have diabetes would be the retinal screening. We look at the retinas to make sure there's no complications from diabetes that would lead to blindness. And the really great thing about that is we can help prevent some of those changes if we're aware that you're having problems in the retina. So we find the problem and then we treat it, and blindness is either delayed or just doesn't happen. And so probably one of the more preventable outcomes for patients who have diabetes would be the blindness. And so getting your eyes checked at least once a year is really important for that.
Yes, I would certainly agree with that. And I got to tell you, Dr. Winter, thank you for spending time with me today on the Fortcast, telling our listeners a little bit more about type 2 diabetes. If you are a listener and you are concerned that you may have type 2 diabetes, please see your primary care physician or your primary care provider and get screened for it. With that being said, I'd like to one last time thank Dr. Winter for joining me on today's Fortcast. Dr. Winter, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners out there, thank you for joining us on this Fortcast podcast. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels. Also, we do have a full podcast library available on the Fort Healthcare website. And have a great day, and thanks for listening. Thank you.